This week on the College Football Roundup, there's a coaching change in Auburn. Dylan Raiola goes down for the season. Miami is stunned in overtime and so much more. This is the Monday Report, starting now. All right. Hello, everybody. It is Monday, November 3rd, 2025, and this is the Monday Report. I'm your host, H. James K., and today we have got one heck of a show. When I was first working on the write-up for this episode, I had seven segments. Seven. But instead, we cut them down, we prioritized, and we got a packed show for y'all today. Starting right at the top, we've got Nebraska having a quarterback change, Miami getting stunned in overtime, Hugh Freeze getting fired by Auburn, we're going to talk about Michigan's sloppy game from this weekend, and then we'll wrap it up with quick hits and then a look at next week. Okay, right off the top, Nebraska starting quarterback Dylan Raiola is done for the year. He broke his fibula in the fourth quarter of the game against USC on Saturday. Pardon me, he broke his fibula in the third quarter of Saturday's game against USC, which eventually was a 21-17 loss to the Trojans in a game where Nebraska was ahead most of the way. Really disappointing result. So he was injured recovering his own fumble in the third quarter. And it's devastating. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Dylan Raiola is the engine that makes everything move at Nebraska right now. He's five-star guy, hugely important quarterback guy. They've been developing him. They thought they were really building something, and now to lose him now, right as we're really getting into the stretch run, down the stretch to get towards the Big Ten Championship with Nebraska, trying to maybe play spoiler, and it's all done. Because, I mean, TJ Latif is going to take over as Nebraska starting QB, but, I mean, what do you expect out of a team that loses its starting quarterback? You know, it's done. It's over. Now, the good news is, he'll be back. Now, whether he'll be the same player he was before, that, you know, remains to be seen. But I have no doubt in my mind that he will be back starting for Nebraska next year. And if seeing Nebraska this year is any indication, they're going to be damn good next year. Because this is a team that's really starting to take shape. You know, Matt Rhule is staying with Nebraska, and they're really starting to build things there. And man, when he gets healthy, look out for him, because it's going to be something. Moving on, number 10 Miami was stunned by SMU in overtime. They were number 10 Miami at the time. So Miami QB Carson Beck finished the game 26 of 38 for 274 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. That second interception, Carson Beck, he threw it at the goal line in overtime when trying to score a touchdown. SMU subsequently answered with a rushing touchdown from running back TJ Harden to win the game 26-20 in overtime. SMU QB Kevin Jennings, super underrated quarterback, really talented, finished the game 29 of 44 for 365 yards and a passing touchdown. Jennings ran for negative 8 yards and a touchdown as well. The big story in my mind for this Miami upset loss is this is a continuing trend under Mario Cristobal. His Oregon teams had this problem. His Miami teams have had this issue for years. If you'll think back, my preseason predictions, I had Miami falling short, going like 8-3, because I just didn't trust that Mario Cristobal's coaching was going to ensure that Miami was properly positioned to win those close games. And once again, they fell short because of stupid mistakes and bad coaching and bad game planning and everything. It's one of those things where I understand why they were ranked so high, but people should have seen this coming. Mario Cristobal's teams have never reached the mountaintop. They just don't do it. They stumble on their way up and fall down. over and over, year after year after year. And I mean, this is a result that I thought this was. I mean, this isn't even the first loss for Miami this year, as far as I remember. And it just, they had, I mean, they had Cam Ward last year, and they went like 8-4. Cam Ward, he was like snapped his fingers and here's another touchdown, and they still didn't get anywhere in the ACC. They didn't get anywhere in the playoffs last year. So this is the same old thing with Mario Cristobal. And if there's any Miami Hurricanes fans watching, I mean, get used to it. This is Mario Cristobal's. This is what happens with him. He'll get you 70% of the way, but you're never going to get all the way. But, you know, if you like, you know, getting stuck on third base, then fine. But that's as far as you're ever going to go with. You're always going to get stranded at third. You're never going to get all the way to home plate with Mario Cristobal. Now, for SMU, huge win. Huge win in a season that hasn't lived up to the expectations they placed on themselves after their surprise Cinderella run to the playoffs last season. Now, this doesn't help. This isn't going to get them in the playoffs. It's not going to get them into the ACC title convo because they're out of it. But it momentum. Affirmation that this thing is going to be able, that they can sustain this kind of momentum going into next year. And I firmly believe in this SMU staff and their QBs and all their players. I know people think, oh, it's SMU, they're a minnow, blah, 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 blah. You know, they're new to the Power Four, but people forget that SMU used to be a real power player in the South back in the 80s before they got nuked from orbit by the NCAA. So there is untapped potential at SMU, and I think we're finally starting to see it again with, you know, their boosters are like, yeah, we're willing to pay for all the money that the ACC would be paying SMU just to get them into the ACC. Yeah, that's a real thing. So for SMU, this is a huge win. They definitely needed this. It's a massive upset. It'll really help the prestige of the program going forward. And with all of the with all of the turnover we're seeing in the coaching realm this year in college football, there might be some room to move up a peg or two in the pecking order because of all the turmoil and roster changeover and coaching staff changeover. So watch SMU in this coming offseason. Now, for maybe the biggest story of the week, Auburn finally did it. After losing to Kentucky 10-6, the University of Auburn has fired head coach Hugh Freeze. Coach Freeze finished his tenure with a record of 15 wins and 19 losses in three seasons. Well, 2 3/4 of a season, but still. This was viewed as a great hire 3 years ago. Like, everyone said, oh yeah, that's huge. You know, he was super successful at Liberty for the short time he was there. And, you know, he was at Ole Miss and he got let go from Ole Miss for failing to live up to expectations. And then he goes to Liberty and he's got them in the playoff hunt and all this stuff and going to major bowl games. And so then Auburn does the no-brainer move and hires Hugh Freeze because obviously he's the guy. And it felt like he was the guy. But continued offensive struggles and a just total lack of quarterback development just doomed Auburn. Much like Billy Napier at Florida, Hugh Freeze was able to recruit better than his predecessor. And his predecessor was Brian Harsin, the former head coach of either Virginia or Virginia Tech. It's one of the two. I can't remember. Either way, he just didn't fit in at Auburn. He clashed with the boosters and the players and coaches and fans, and it was a disaster. And they fired him and hired Hugh Freeze, and it was thought to be great. But much like Billy Napier at Florida, Hugh Freeze just was never able to develop players that he was bringing in. And I mean, you're in the SEC. You're a small fish in a very deadly pond. So it's one of these things where expected result is expected. I mean, part of me thought that they would wait till the end of the season, but you can't lose 10-6 to Kentucky. This Kentucky team is not one of those sneaky Kentucky teams that's like really out to get you. No, they're not good. And they're probably going to fire their head coach. So, yeah, it was one of those things where it was going to happen eventually. And it adds just another team into this insane, crazy coaching carousel that we're going to have this coming off season. Because now we've got Auburn, Penn State, LSU, Virginia Tech, Oklahoma State, Florida. I mean, do people really believe? Oh, and we might get Wisconsin, we might get Florida State, we might get Michigan State. There are so many teams. Do people really think that all of these teams are going to get a better coach? I'm not so sure. So it's going to be freaking crazy. Just that's it's going to be crazy. I was blown away by everyone's decision. They're like, yeah, $15 million buyout, that's no big deal. Let's just do that. Like, there's going to be like $400 million in buyout money being paid off by the time this offseason comes around. Between all the current buyouts and the buyouts from previous years, there's going to be like $400 million worth of total buyout money. It's insane. It's unsustainable. That's what it is. But Hugh Freeze's time at Auburn has ended, and now it is time to look forward to their next head coach. And if I had to make a guess as to who that would be, ooh, man. I mean, there's the usual suspects. You know, there's Alex Galesh and John Summerall and Jeff Traylor. And, you know, and obviously there's the guys like, you know, there's James Franklin, maybe, and Brian Kelly, maybe. I doubt that one, but maybe. And, you know, there's Will Stein, maybe. But if I had to make a guess of who I think they will end up signing, my thinking is probably, ooh, man. I mean, the ultimate pick for them, I think, would be signing James Franklin. I think he'd be great at Auburn. I mean, if you wanted to get 10 wins a year and be sneaky contender every other year, then yeah, he's the guy. Yep. That's because at Auburn, it's the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, and you got to take the good with the bad, and I think he could be a good coach there. Now, realistically, I don't think he's going to go there. I have a feeling he's going to go to Virginia Tech, because from what I've heard, Virginia Tech values James Franklin very, very, very much. He recruits the Virginia area really well. He has ties to the Virginia area well. He knows a lot of people, so Virginia Tech would really like to sign him, and I have a gut feeling that's probably going to happen. So, short of that, Auburn, Alex Galesh, maybe? Because I think LSU is going to sign John Summerall. I know that's not super flashy, but I think that's the right fit for LSU from a like holistic point of view. So, Alex Galesh, that's the head coach at the University of South Florida. I think ultimately Florida and Penn State are going to poach people that we don't even think are a possibility. You know, guys like Brian Hartline, the offensive coordinator at Ohio State, like guys like that who you're just like, what? I can't believe they signed that guy. So, but yeah, Alex Galesh to Auburn, that makes a lot of sense. He's built a really good program that likes to, at South Florida, that likes to run the ball. They play good defense. They have decent QB play. So I think, because Auburn is not going to get a top level job. No matter what SEC fans say, Auburn is not a top job. It just isn't. I would put Auburn as no higher priority than like Wisconsin or Nebraska or Washington. Mid-tier conference opponent that everyone goes, man, maybe they'll give us a spook here, but we're probably going to beat them anyway. That's Auburn in my view. Because as far as I know, Auburn has been good twice since I started watching college football in 2007. They've been good twice. And very briefly. So, yeah, that's where the hot board stands for coaching candidates for Auburn. I mean, at this point, we're all just throwing, you know, names at the wall because it's freaking November and none of that's going to be sorted out until January or December at the earliest. So, we're all just speculating at this point. All right, moving on. Michigan defeated Purdue. They welcomed the Boilermakers to Ann Arbor, defeating them 21-16. Took a drink of lemonade real quick. So, right off the top, I'm going to give kudos to Samaj Morgan. He didn't drop another ball. He didn't drop a pass. If anything, Bryce Underwood needs to be blamed for a ball because Samaj was wide open. He was going to catch it. It was great positioning. And Bryce Underwood threw it 5 feet over his head on a probably 15-yard kind of deep in kind of route. And it was perfect. Oh, he was right there. And it was, he wanted it so bad. And he didn't make any horrible mistakes on offense. Now, he did have one punt return that he could have gone forward and said ran to the left for a 3-yard loss. But, you know, punt returning is punt returning. So I'm going to give Samaj Morgan some credit. This was a step in the right direction because before you can start healing, you have to stop the bleeding. Okay, we've stopped the bleeding. Things are getting stable. Now we can start getting better. So from here on, going into the bye week, for some, if you're Samaj Morgan, you know, keep your head high and focus on just getting better. Getting on the same page with Bryce Underwood, because part of me, maybe the part of me that has seen him make good plays in the past, thinks that maybe he can do something. Ultimately, I don't think he should be a starter at Michigan, but he is a starter at Michigan right now. We just have to admit that. So part of me thinks, you know, take this bye week and make a step towards fixing the issues on offense. The big things I took away from this Michigan game are, boy, Michigan's young. At the time, my dad has season tickets, so I go to all the home games, and in the moment, you're just going through it, because you have nothing to do but focus on the game that's happening around you, and it's always worse when you're there. So we were like, oh my god, fire Sharon, fire Wink Martindale, fire half the coaches, fire everybody, tear down the stadium, burn it all, it's all over. Michigan is horrible. But when you take a step back and be a little more serious, Michigan is the youngest team in the Big Ten. And Michigan was playing a ton of young guys all over the place. Like right now, there are three true freshmen or redshirt freshmen O-linemen starting right now. Our starting running back is a redshirt freshman. Our starting quarterback is a true freshman. Our best wide receiver is a true freshman. Our best tight end, Zach Marshall, in my opinion, is a freshman or a redshirt freshman. He's young too. On defense, you've got multiple young guys all over the defense. You know, two freshmen at linebacker getting a lot of snaps. Several freshman DBs have been rotating in and out, but especially in this Purdue game, because Michigan, Jimmy Rolder and Cole Sullivan are going to be out for a while. So Michigan's getting thin at linebacker, and Ernest Hausman can only do so much. And so we're seeing a lot of young guys on defense, on every level of defense. And it shows, because Michigan's defense was eh against Purdue. I mean, yeah, they kept him off the board largely. But bad tackling, bad gap discipline, mental mistakes, blown coverages, it's all the stuff you see when you've got a young, injured defense. And I'll get to the youth on offense in a second, but I want to focus on the defense for right now. Like, we're seeing guys like TJ Metcalf and, oh man, what was that linebacker's name? God, I apologize, but I can't remember his name at the moment. But just a lot of youth on defense. And on offense, Bryce Underwood is a true freshman, and the ups and downs are just part of the deal. Like, he's a true freshman. He's 18. I mean, we saw this last year with Dylan Raiola. Dylan Raiola was either the highest of highs or the lowest of lows with Nebraska in 2024. He was all over the place. Horrible at managing the offense, took too long to make decisions, threw bad interceptions, fumbles, too many sacks. And then coming into this year, Dylan Raiola took a massive step forward. Now, Raiola has some growing to do. He takes too long to read defenses, but he is a vastly improved quarterback. And so with Bryce Underwood, Purdue was by far, in my opinion, the worst game he's played, because you're at home and you're making a lot of the mistakes you make on the road. He was rushing, he was abandoning clean pockets, overthrowing guys, he fumbled a ball that went into the end zone, resulting in a turnover on downs that went to Purdue, he threw a bad interception. This was his worst game. He overthrew some horrible, he made some horrible overthrows that are like, oh, if you get that, that's 20 yards. Like Samaj Morgan, it would have been like a 15-yard gain. And it was a good throw, and he overthrew it. And there was one to Marsh, and he missed a beautiful open shot to Donovan McCauley in the corner of the end zone. Just didn't, never even saw him. Threw it to someone else, and it was almost intercepted. So, for Bryce Underwood, we got to preach patience. We got to preach patience with Michigan, because it's going to take some time. And you know what? Maybe Michigan doesn't go 10-2 and go to the playoffs this year, but I would rather, like, if my options were go 10-2 and get blasted like 50-0 in the playoffs, or go 9-3 and get a whole bunch of young guys playing time and experience, we can have a really massive leap forward in 2026, then I'd probably pick that one. I mean, I would love, don't get me wrong, I would love to beat Ohio State, but I don't think that's really realistic. So if my options are getting blasted in the playoffs and getting humiliated in the playoffs, or maybe building something that's more sustainable for next year when we can really contend, when we're not the youngest team in the Big Ten Conference, then yeah, maybe that's what's better for the long-term health of the team. Because as we saw in 2021, Michigan was very young. A lot of young guys everywhere. And they went to the playoffs against Georgia and they got blasted. And then in 2022, they went to the playoffs again and they got embarrassed by TCU because they just didn't know how to win that game yet. They were still very young. They were still inexperienced. But then 2023 rolls around and it's like everything is ready. Everyone is matured and the team has depth and the QB is ready to go. And that's when the stars aligned. Now, I would hope that the 2023 thing happens in 2026 for Michigan. But if Michigan makes a big step forward in 2026 based on the foundation laid this year, I see that as an absolute win, because seeing the team Michigan has right now with the injuries Michigan has right now, there is no way Michigan is winning the Big Ten. There's no way they're going to the playoffs. There's no way they're going to win a national championship. It's just not happening. This Michigan team isn't ready yet. It's like, yeah, you can pull the pizza out of the oven, but the cheese isn't even melted yet. I mean, yeah, it'll be quote-unquote warm, but the pizza's not done. You got to keep that bad boy in the oven. You know, we're not ready. So for Michigan football, don't resign this season. You know, don't just resign ourselves to like, oh, well, the season's over, because it's not. Michigan can still surprise people and beat Ohio State and go on a crazy Cinderella run. But realistically, everything Michigan does this year shapes how 2026 is going to go. And part of that, I think, is going to have to be some staff changes. Like offensive line coach, wide receivers coach, special teams, linebackers. All of them have got to go. Special teams has been a disaster in 2025. The linebackers are just not good. It's the same problems we saw when Brian Jean Mary, who is the linebacker coach now, was the linebacker coach under Harbaugh in 2020, where the team was just not good at linebacker. And at wide receiver, Rod Woodson or whatever his name is, he's a horrible wide receivers coach. And I get that he's one of the best, if not the best, recruiter on Michigan's staff. But the wide receiver position is the most vital position other than quarterback. And we have the quarterback. But our receivers are continually mediocre. I mean, I'm sorry. Roman Wilson should have been an all NCAA kind of guy. He should have been an all-world receiver because he was so talented. But he was just an okay kind of second-team all-conference guy. And that's unacceptable. So in 2025, going into 2026, Michigan's got to make a change there. And On the O-line, I like Grant Newsom. Personally, I think he should have stayed at tight ends coach because I thought he was a great tight ends coach in 2023 with Colston Loveland and all that. But, you know, Steve Kasula is doing an okay job at tight ends coach. But I think he should move back to tight ends coach. And we should hire a real offensive line coach because, oh my God, our O-line doesn't, it isn't gelling. It's not progressing. It's making the same mistakes that it did last year. It just, it's more of the same. All right, now it's time to move on to quick hits. So first of all, Virginia and Louisville continue to impress in the ACC. Virginia is 8-1, while Louisville is 7-1. And part of me always kind of hoped that Louisville would get good under Jeff Brohm because I saw what he could do at Purdue, and he's, in my opinion, one of the five best coaches in the country. I love Jeff Brohm. He's a great coach. And what Virginia is building right now is just incredible. Talk about out of nowhere. I'm pretty sure I predicted that they would finish like 12th in the ACC, and right now they're right in the hunt. They're really well ranked. You could make the argument they're the best team in the ACC right now if it's not Louisville. I certainly don't think it's Miami, and it ain't Florida State and Clemson. And we're going to refuse to talk about the dumpster fire that is Clemson. But for Virginia and Louisville, it's just, they're having a really dream season, a dream season, and I'm really wondering, how far can these two teams go? Can these two teams do what nobody thought was possible in the preseason and, you know, get to the ACC championship game and go to the playoffs and do all those things? Because if they can, then man, oh man, that's crazy. And I say that those teams really have an opportunity because fellow conference opponent North Carolina State defeated number 8 Georgia Tech. Man, that game, Georgia Tech was in the driver's seat. They were cruising. They were going to go to the ACC championship game, and now they've lost to North Carolina State, and it's just game on. You know, it's like, okay, door's open. Can somebody sneak up and snatch it? You know, because North Carolina State's not, they're not in it. You know, this is going to, Dave Doeren is the head coach at NC State, and this is going to be his last year. And Clark Lee? Is Clark Lee the head coach at Georgia Tech? No, Brent Pry. It's Brent Pry. And Brent Pry is building something, but, you know, his, the kind of the quote-unquote business model for their offense, just, I don't think it's very sustainable. You can't just be, well, if Haynes King has a good game, we win, and if he doesn't, we lose. You know, Diego Pavia and Clark Lee and Vanderbilt have the same problem. But, you know, for Georgia Tech, it's almost exacerbated because Haynes King is such a huge part of their run game at Georgia Tech. So you kind of always knew that this was going to happen eventually to this team because it's unsustainable to have a running QB be like half of your run totals every week. And to have like 15 plus carries on the ground every week, I mean, it's not sustainable. So yeah, that happened. Now, number 18, Oklahoma over number 14, Tennessee. Are those rankings still correct? I don't think those are correct anymore. They were correct. No, they were. They were correct over the weekend. So Oklahoma got a much needed win over the Tennessee Volunteers. And this is a game that they needed to win this game because Oklahoma was dangerous, was precariously balancing on the edge of a knife, where it was just one of these things where another loss and things maybe start to unravel for Brent Venables at Oklahoma. But instead, they get a win over Tennessee and they kind of right the ship, even though it looked ugly and John Mateer didn't play well. But even still, They managed to get an ugly win and kind of steady the ship, so to speak, going forward, even if they've still got some tough matchups going forward. Indiana eviscerated Maryland 55-10, and Indiana continues to show that they are the best team in the country. I mean, as we've seen this season with Indiana, basically the way the game goes is Kurt Cignetti walks on the field, he hands the other team's coach a can of whoop-asses and says, either you can open it or I can open it for you. But either way, Indiana's opening up a can on your ass. and they do it every week. You get a 50 burger, and you get a 50 burger, and you get one. It just, they blast everybody. And the way they do it is what's the most incredible. They do it in every way. Run the ball, pass the ball, defense, special teams. They beat you in every phase in the worst possible way and demoralize you from sheer freaking perfection of execution. It's incredible to watch them because I never thought it was possible for Indiana to be that kind of team. Even Michigan's 23 squad wasn't like that. You know, it wasn't that we were getting 200 on the ground and J.J. McCarthy was throwing for 290 yards. You know, Michigan wasn't doing that. But this Indiana team destroys everybody. And they don't care who's in front of them. They blast you either way. Like I said, they open up a can of whoop-ass on everybody. Colorado. They got a 50 burger for the second week in a row. Yep, they lost like 53-7 or whatever against Utah, and then they got blasted by Arizona 52-17 over the weekend, and the combo of Julian Lewis, Ryan Staub, Caton Salter, and Dominic Ponder at QB just it isn't working out. Colorado's struggles to replace Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter just, it's been a disaster. They're 3-6. The team doesn't do anything well. And ultimately, that comes down to Deion Sanders' philosophy. Because it's an adage that I heard once when talking about NFL free agency. Any offensive lineman you see in NFL free agency is someone that the other team was willing to let go. No saviors on the O-line are going to be found in free agency because if they were really that guy, they would be paid and kept in-house. You know, you're not going to find Penei Sewell on free agency. You're just not. Detroit's going to pay that guy. You know, Christian Darrisaw for the Vikings is going to get paid. So for Colorado, they do almost all of their team construction through the portal. But one, the guys in the portal aren't going to, you can't get depth in the portal. And you're not going to get that A-list talent that gets you over the hump. But there's another issue that no one wants to talk about with the portal. And this is something that we're starting to notice for teams that build almost exclusively through the portal. Florida State, Colorado, North Carolina this year. The good teams in the country have a foundation and a locker room culture. And that foundation is only built through recruiting through high school players. The only way to find sustained success is having a culture established from recruiting in high school where you can get your guys in the building and mature them and develop them where you're augmenting with the portal. But the guys who are coming in from the portal have to take on the culture established by your in-house guys who are setting the example. That's how the winning teams do it. Because there is no locker room cohesion. There is no inner culture that keeps people together through the tough times when everyone is a mercenary taken out of the portal. And for Colorado, it's one of these things where they're just 105 mercenaries every week. They have no, you look at their teams and the second things go bad, they unravel. And it's a completely avoidable problem. But as we've seen, Deion Sanders does not want to do recruiting. He actually doesn't do in-house recruiting at all. He doesn't visit anybody. He'll welcome people on campus, but he doesn't go out and hit the pavement like everyone else does. Excuse me. So, it's... And another thing, and this is a totally different gripe with Colorado. They're not physical. They have negative physicality. Anytime they come up against a strong breeze, they give up 50 points. They just get gashed and pushed around and bullied everywhere because for some reason, Deion's team lacks toughness. And they say that kind of thing reflects the mentality of the coaches. And it blows my mind because Colorado puts YouTube videos out all the time of things going on at practice. One of Deion Sanders' kids, I think it's Deion Sanders Jr., he records a whole bunch of stuff at their practices so you can see how they run their practices. Deion is a tough coach. He gets after players. Now, the problem is it doesn't mean anything because it's a mentality thing. His teams throw the ball like 80% of the time. They just throw the ball and throw the ball, throw the ball, throw the ball, throw the ball. And that's fine if you've got Shedeur Sanders, but when you don't, and you put no emphasis on running the ball, it's hard to be physical when you don't have a QB. So, for Colorado, it leads me to wonder if the Deion Sanders experiment is going to end. Because it just, yeah, there was that magical 2024 season, but everything else has been bad. And this season, I think it's going to get worse because they're getting blasted by bad teams. But we'll see. You know, this season, 2025 is a lost cause. Maybe 2026 will be better. Maybe the next group of mercenaries that get out of the portal will be the ones to get them over the hump. But as we're seeing with Florida State, that's not really an answer. Because mercenaries don't give a fuck when the time gets tough. As we're seeing with Florida State right now. Things got bad, team falls apart. No cultural cohesion. No brotherhood. It's just, well, this sucks. I guess I'll be going back in the portal. So, we'll see with Colorado. I love Deion. I want him to work. I love his hire. I love what he's doing there. But at some point, you are what the product in the field says you are. And right now, that means mediocre. Because they're mediocre. They don't act like a football team. They're not physical. They commit too many penalties. They want to play a style of game that just, I mean, it works on Madden, but I wouldn't want to throw the ball 90 times a game in real life. It's not sustainable. You have to play complementary football. You have to manage the clock and play defense and be able to run the ball and do all the things that helps complete teams be complete teams. Colorado is the furthest thing from a complete team right now. All right, next week, Michigan is on a bye. Thank God, because Michigan is hurt everywhere. And maybe it'll give Michigan a chance to get healthy. So Michigan, now, with that in mind, Michigan's outlook without Justice Haynes. We have to think about that because it has been reported that Justice Haynes is getting foot surgery. His recovery timetable is thought to be, quote, sometime this season. But I don't know about you, but I don't know of many foot surgeries that will allow a guy known for running 85 yards down the field in one go, allow him to play against Ohio State in like 4 weeks. I just don't know if that's... Now, maybe it's one of those like arthroscopic surgeries where they go in and kind of clean some things up. Maybe it's like that. But for Michigan, it's going to have to be, okay, what's the outlook going to be at the running back position without him? And that right now, that looks like Jasper Park. That looks like Jordan Marshall starting with Jasper Parker and Bryson Cuzdahl backing him up. And Cuzdahl had some good running against Purdue, and Jordan Marshall just had a hat trick and he was great. So that's kind of where it's at. But with the loss of Justice Haynes, at least for the next couple of weeks, depth is a serious concern at running back. Like, people regard Michigan as, oh, they have great running backs, but really, we have a redshirt freshman starter and two true freshmen that no one has ever seen. Really. So Michigan cannot afford to get any thinner at running back. All right, number 8, BYU is taking on number 9, Texas Tech at Texas Tech. This is a battle between the 8-0 BYU Cougars and the 8-1 Texas Tech Red Raiders. BYU is one of the last 4 undefeated teams in the country, and this is a battle for control of the Big 12, because these two teams are, in my opinion, the cream of the crop when it comes to the Big 12 conference. And the winner of this game is probably going to the playoffs. So, you know, whether you're a Cougars fan or a fan of the Red Raiders, this is the game that you got circled. And if it was me, Big Noon and Game Day are going to be at that. Should be at that game because it is by far the best, most important matchup of the week. But knowing ESPN, they're going to be at the next game I got to talk about, which is number 3, Texas A&M. Excuse me. Going to number 19, Mizzou. Texas A&M is 8-0, whereas Mizzou is 6-2 on the season. This is another game that is hugely important, this time for the SEC title race. And this Texas A&M team is so good. They're just... Mizzou is a talented team, and Coach Drinkwitz is a really good coach, but I am predicting that Texas A&M is going to open up a can on their ass. I think it's going to be like 35-13. I think this Texas A&M team is just going to absolutely smother Mizzou. And I forgot to give a prediction for BYU versus Texas Tech. I am predicting that Texas Tech is going to win 28-27. I think it's going to be kind of lower scoring than one might expect. Really, 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 really close. Now, the next game we got to talk about is Navy is going to Notre Dame. Navy is 7-1, whereas Notre Dame is 6-2. Notre Dame welcomes one of their longtime rivals for a game that is likely going to be exceedingly boring. But it could be feisty. You know, playing service academy teams is never easy. They're always very physical, and they play a really weird style of ball that's really hard to defend because no one has to practice for it. So, if I had to predict this game, I'm predicting it's going to be 24-6 Notre Dame. I think it's going to be lower scoring just from defense and the fact that Navy chews up the clock like no one else. But I think ultimately it's going to be a game that Notre Dame controls for the duration. They'll be up like 14-0 at halftime and they'll be like, okay, that's it, that's a wrap. And they'll coast to the end. And then the last game I want to talk about, number 6, Oregon is going to unranked Iowa. And as every Big Ten fan will tell you, going to Iowa is no small thing. Kinnick Stadium is weird. There's some weird voodoo at Kinnick Stadium. They got that children's hospital right looking into the stadium, and it's just you got that weird voodoo where great teams go into Iowa and get embarrassed. In 2016, Michigan was so good. They were 10-0, and they went into Iowa, and Iowa beat them in like a 13-9 game, and Wilton Spate broke his collarbone, and Michigan lost the game on a late field goal, and it just derailed Michigan's season because then they had to go play Ohio State the next week, and Spate kind of could go, but he really couldn't, and Michigan lost that game and missed the playoffs, and it was ugly. And we've seen, Iowa beat the tar out of an Urban Meyer Ohio State team years ago. And people have kind of slept on the whole Iowa thing because they've been bad for the last 2 years. But this Iowa team is no joke. Rob Gronkowski, their quarterback from the South Dakota State Jackrabbits, I think is where he's from originally. He's from the FCS, and he's like the most experienced quarterback in college football right now. He's got like 67 starts or whatever. So Gronkowski is sneaky good. He can run, he can throw, and as crazy as it is, Iowa is like a real team this year. They're not just kind of that joke meme team that's really bad, but also kind of really super physical that oopsies their way to like 9 wins. No. Iowa's good this year. But because they're in the Big Ten and they're Iowa, they're not getting any respect from the polls. Just like Washington. Washington's the same story. But for Iowa, at home, I wouldn't be surprised if the game is at night. And if you're Oregon, you better be on your toes, because as I've seen, Iowa can embarrass you. They've done it before. And this Oregon team is good, but they're not the team last year. And they're certainly not the teams with Bo Nix. This is a team that they're inexperienced, they're younger. But Dan Lanning is a great coach, so they still manage to beat the crap out of most teams. So ultimately, if I had to predict the score, I'm predicting that Oregon is going to win the game by a score of 27 to 14. It'll be one of those games that'll be like 14 to, it'll be like 7 to 7 at halftime. It'll be like 17 to 14 or whatever, you know, something like that. You know, 17 to 14 going into the fourth quarter, and then like Oregon will pull away, but it'll feel ugly and awful and bleh, and no one's going to really enjoy it if they're an Oregon fan, but even though they're going to get the win. So 27 to 14, that's my prediction. All right, that will do it for today. For those of you listening on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and everywhere else that podcasts are available, thank you, and thank you. I really appreciate it. Please spread the word so we can help the channel, the podcast, grow. For those of you watching on YouTube, please consider liking, commenting, and subscribing, because, especially subscribing, but commenting, because it helps feed the algorithm, which helps me reach more people. Next week, we're going to continue with the college football roundup, and I wonder who's going to get fired next week, because it seems like we've been doing one of those every week for the last month and a half. But either way, my name is H. James K. Thank you all for tuning in. Until next time.